Alrighty, so this morning we are starting our Truth About Sex series, and I am so excited about it, and I know that you guys are too, by the looks of it. But this is such an important thing for us to talk about. And you may be wondering, why are we talking about sex at church? And I would actually ask the question, why not? This is the place that we should be talking about it. This is the place, the safest place, where we can talk about the truth about God's good design for sex. So before we get in, I've got a couple expectations that are really important for us to understand as we get into this. And these aren't any different expectations of any other Sunday or Wednesday that we're together. But I think particularly as we're talking about a subject that can be awkward and can be sensitive in a lot of different ways, it's important that we have a couple expectations. The first one being, it's important that we are respectful. And I mean that in every sense of the word, that we're respectful to one another during this time, whether it be on Sundays and Wednesdays, or particularly on Sundays, that you guys are respectful to whoever's up here teaching. And that can look a lot of different ways. I think for sure listening well and not having side conversations. It's really easy to get to be distracting when something's said that might be kind of silly or awkward or something, and you turn to a friend and you have a side conversation. I know the temptation is strong, but I would just encourage you guys not to have side conversations, because it just takes a few of us to make it where it's really distracting. So be respectful of this space, be respectful of each other, be respectful of your leaders. The next one is appropriate conversations, both here at Overflow and outside of Overflow. And when we're talking about a subject like sex, it's really important that we keep our conversations appropriate. One of the things that can come up a lot is crude jokes, and that just means like inappropriate jokes. So this is one of those things that I'm going to be really firm about. I do not want to catch wind of any sort of crude or inappropriate jokes about this, because all it takes is one of those jokes from any of us, and it makes a subject that's really important that we all need to be learning about and trusting each other in, and it turns it into something that's uncomfortable, and this place won't be a safe, comfortable place to talk about this. Does that make sense? So let's be mindful of the jokes that we're making and things like that. And the last thing is ask questions. So come Wednesday, you guys will have note cards that you guys will be able to write questions down on. And we're going to have a box in the back that you guys will be able to drop those in. So throughout the series, and we'll talk about what it's going to look like, but we recognize that questions are going to come up, right? There's going to be things that come up that we're not necessarily going to have time to cover during our Sundays and Wednesdays time. But we want to answer those questions. We want to help you guys navigate those. So there will be note cards. So for this morning, if you have any questions, you can write it down on your bulletin. And then come Wednesday, we can write those things down on those note cards. Sound good? So these are kind of our general expectations. Most of you guys have been a part of this Overflow family for a little bit now. And you understand kind of our general expectations that we have for you guys. But I just want you to know, like, you guys are so capable of what we're talking about for the next 4 weeks. And it's crazy when I tell people that, hey, yeah, we're doing a junior high series on the truth about sex. It kind of like brings a reaction to people of like, wait, you're talking about that in junior high? And to me, I'm like, yeah, this is the time that we need to be talking about it. So you guys are capable. You guys are mature enough. I trust you guys. I have no doubt that you guys can kind of fulfill these expectations. So I just want to, it's important that we kind of clear the air with that at the beginning before we move forward. Sound good? Sweet. All right. So with that said, back to the thing of why talk about sex? Why are we spending 4 weeks talking about this? And the reality is, one, sex can be really uncomfortable to talk about. On Wednesday, we're going to take a survey, and you guys have an opportunity to let us know if you've had this conversation, if you've had any conversations about sex. And my hope, and I understand that many of you have. But the reality is, whether it's with our parents or at school or here, it can be an uncomfortable and awkward conversation to have. But it is so important that we do, because the reality is we're bombarded every single day with messages about sex and sexuality, about what it is, about how we should think about it, about how we should feel about it, what's good and not good about it. We have these messages. Whether we're looking for them or not, we're getting them from places like movies. How many of you have seen Titanic? Not a lot. Great. That's awesome. Movies, social media, there's messages, advertisements about how we should look, how we should present ourselves, what is a healthy sex life, those kinds of things. whether you're following someone or not, these things are being thrown at us. From that one friend, we all have that one friend. Don't be that one friend. But I remember in sixth grade, one of my really good friends, or actually it was third grade, sorry, heard from his sixth grade brother all this stuff about sex. And guess what? That's how I heard all about it in third grade because of that one friend. So who knows what that is, right? Or TV shows, like these TV shows that maybe aren't bad in and of themselves, but they have these implicit, like unintentional but not clear messages about what relationships should look like, about what sexuality should look like, about what sex should look like. We're getting these messages all over the place, and it can be confusing of how to discern what is true, what is good, what is right in all of this. I'm still confused by some of these messages. And underlying all of these messages, we have bigger messages. Messages like from our culture, from these things like whatever feels good, do it. Or as long as you both agree on it, go for it. Do whatever you want to do. Or as long as there's feelings of love, do it. Or everyone's doing it, right? The classic, everyone's doing it, so go for it, right? Ideas have consequences. So the messages that we receive, if we choose to believe them, whether intentionally or not, ideas have consequences. And our exposure to these sometimes inaccurate and false ideas about sex and other things can lead us to make foolish decisions. And these foolish decisions can lead to harmful, deep wounds and painful memories that can last us a lifetime. And this is not the life that God has for us. God has such a fuller, freer, more joy-filled life for us than what the world has to offer. And for that reason, that is why we are diving into God's word and science. We're looking at biology and psychology and all these other disciplines to discover truth about what God's good intention, his good design for sex is, and how we are to navigate the challenges that we face right now in junior high and in the future. So, my encouragement for us throughout this entire series is that a life with Jesus, living his way, is not just the right way to live, not just the right thing to do, but it is the best way to live, the fullest life, most full of joy and freedom and goodness and beauty and purpose and meaning and all of these things. A life following Jesus is that. And sexuality is an area of life that is really important for us to have that lens with. So with that said, I'm just going to pray for us to kind of enter into this morning. And this morning, the purpose of this morning is just set the stage for the rest of the series, to lay a foundation for that. So will you guys pray with me and just acknowledge God as we dive into this? God, you are good, you are faithful, and you are our creator, you are our designer. And we look to you to discover the truth about reality. In this, the next 4 weeks, the truth about sex and sexuality. God, we want to look to you for that. So I pray this morning that you would open up our hearts and our minds to what you have for us. God, we praise you right now for your truth, for your word, and for the world that you've given us to observe and discover who you are and how we are to live by it. We love you. In your name, amen. All right, so when we want to understand what something is, what are the best practices of that thing, what are the best functions of that thing, typically the best place to look is the designer or the creator of that thing. In 2007, the first iPhone came out. Now, I was in eighth grade, and this was like a big deal. Before that, they had come out with computers. They had come out with iPods that were like the size of this laptop. They were just big old bricks, but they were awesome. And then I think they came out with like the first iPod Nano that was really small. And then there was word that there was an iPod that could be used as a phone. Yeah, could be used as a phone, meaning that you could take your iPod that held music and you could call friends on it or family or use it as communication. It was a huge deal. Now it's like every year Apple comes out with a new product and it's kind of like, Like, you can, like, face scan or, like, hologram your life story or, like, whatever it may be, like, these different features. But this was, like, a huge deal. So because of that, Apple had, like, this town hall meeting where the designers of and Steve Jobs, the creator, they had, like, a meeting with all the investors, the people that had given money to Apple, and they streamed it online so you could understand what the iPhone was. What was the purpose of it? How do you use it? And why is it even a thing? Like, why are they making the iPhone? So that was where it made sense to look there for it. And that's a great example for us in that we too have a designer. We have a creator who has made us on purpose, with intention, for a purpose, with meaning. And we can look to him, look to God, to understand who we are and how we are to live. And that's the approach that we're taking throughout this series. Because sex is one of those areas of life where we need to be asking the question, what is God's design? What is his intention for sex? And then, how can we live into that? Because guess what? The fullest, best way to live is that way. So, the next 4 weeks, we're going to be building a foundation, starting with week one, where we're going to ask the question, what does it mean to be human? What is God's intention for humanity? Because guess what? Before we can understand what God's intention for sex is, we have to understand what his intention for us is in the first place, right? The next week, week two, we're going to be talking about what's the truth about guys and girls. The reality is God has made us male and female. And there's a lot of confusing messages in the world today of what that means. So we're going to have a really simple conversation of how did God intend us to be as men and women? What are his intentions with that? Because before we can talk about what God's design and intention for sex is, we have to understand what his intention is for us as men and women. The third week, all of your guys' favorite week, we're going to talk about what God's design, his intention for sex is. And we're going to be asking the question, what is sex and what is sex and what is God's intention for it? And then the final week, we're going to have an honest conversation about how are we to live in light of God's design for sex, in light of God's design for us as men and women, in light of God's intention for us as humanity, how are we to live the fullest, most faithful life that God has for us. Does that make sense? So today we are starting off with the question, what does it mean to be human? Now, this is a really big question, right? And it's a really important question because first of all, there's no simple answer to this question. This is like one of those big questions that philosophers spend centuries discussing of what it means to be human. But our understanding and our answer to this question has tons of implications of how we live our life. Tons of implications. Because this question, rooted in it, has three sub-questions. The question of who am I? What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be me? What is my identity as a human? The second question is, why am I here? Why am I here? Do I have a purpose? Is there meaning that I have in my life? And the third question is, do I matter? Do I have value? Do I have worth in and of myself? So those are the questions that we are going to be covering this morning in the simplest way that we can. But before we do that, I want to look at what are some of the ideas that come from the world. What are some of the ideas, the messages that are coming out as far as this question goes? One of the extreme ones comes from a woman named Greta Christina, and she's an atheist blogger, a really well-respected atheist blogger. So she doesn't believe in God, and she writes about women rights issues and animal rights issues and things like that. And she has this to say about humanity. It's a little bit long, but follow along with me. We are animals. I'll say that again. We are animals. We are a product of evolution, a product of nature. Yes, we're animals with an unusual ability to shape our environment, but it's an unusual ability, not a unique one. Other living things have made dramatic physical impacts on the planet as well. Coral, for instance, earthworms, And of course, plants. Plants breathing in carbon dioxide and breathing out oxygen made a huge radical change to the atmosphere of the planet. And yes, humans are dominant life form on the planet right now, but even that doesn't make us special. Other life forms have been dominant in the past. Trilobites, for instance, and dinosaurs, they were around for tens of thousands of years. We've been the dominant species for what, 10,000? In geological terms, we're not even a blip. Now, there's a lot going on here, but the part I want to focus on is the underlining worldview, the way that she looks at the world without God, is she sees that humans, we are no different than anything else in this world, no different than an earthworm, no different or unique or valuable than a plant, right? These have all made impacts. They've all done things to make the world different. They all made a change. Humans are no different. We're just a blip. Right? And you can hear the tone of what that might, like if you follow this idea, how do you answer those questions of why am I here? What am I here for? Do I matter? Right? You can imagine how she would answer those questions based on those assumptions. Taken further, you guys have heard of PETA before. It's an animal rights organization, and not to get into what they're all about, but this is what the president of PETA has to say. Animal liberationists do not separate out the human animal. So there is no rational basis for saying that a human being has any special rights. A rat is a pig, is a dog, is a boy. They are all mammals. Okay? So pretty intense what she's saying there, right? Basically what she's saying in summary is that there is nothing special about being human relative to other animals. We're all mammals, right? So you may be thinking, okay, these are like two people on one end of the spectrum, an extreme end of the spectrum as far as what does it mean to be human, right? They're saying we're just animals, one day we'll die and decompose, and that's it. What is the impact on our environment when these messages are like the underlying foundation of our culture? Well, you go no further than our friend Harambe. Now, some of you maybe have heard of Harambe before, you've heard the jokes about it and things like that. But this is a video of a gorilla where behind him there's a little boy that fell into an enclosed cage with this massive gorilla. Now, this gorilla is an endangered species and an important part of the Cincinnati Zoo. But this little boy fell in, and I didn't play the sound, but the mom is screaming for the zookeeper to get her little boy. The gorilla dragging the little boy. Obviously, they're afraid of the gorilla for her son's life. As the video moves on, the zookeeper ends up shooting the gorilla, killing the gorilla, because they were afraid that the gorilla was going to kill the boy. Now, there's a ton of debate of whether or not they should have shot the gorilla with like sedatives or things like that, but ultimately it was a reaction of, we need to save this boy, right? In that moment, the family and the zookeeper said, this boy is more important than this gorilla. Even though this gorilla is important and endangered and all of that, it's more important that we save this boy's life. You may be thinking, oh yeah, that's an obvious choice, right? Not so much. PETA came out with this, which is what started the whole thing, of rip Harambe the gorilla. This shouldn't have happened to you. Boycott the zoo. Now, a lot of their tone was centered around that they shouldn't have killed him, but they should have given him sedatives and things like that. But it brought to light this contrast in our culture that there are people who believe that this gorilla is just as valuable as that boy and they should not have killed that gorilla, or in some cases maybe even more valuable than that boy. Now I say this just to give you a picture of the kinds of messages and ideas that are out there, and there's a spectrum of belief on this scale, but these are things that we are receiving from Twitter and Instagram and all over, and these ideas have consequences. If you were to take this seriously, humans have no God-given value, meaning, or purpose. We're just here for a time, we die and decompose, and we are no more important than a gorilla. So it's no wonder that we live in a world that says humans are valuable by what we do, what we achieve, how we look, right? It's no wonder that our culture promotes those things for us to be better. The best life is when you have a lot of money, when you have success, and when you look a certain way. And we all feel that pressure, whether we acknowledge that it's wrong or not. We feel that pressure every single day to find our value in other things. If you were on the winter retreat, that's literally all we talked about, is that we are made to trust and treasure God, but we have this pressure to find our identity and our purpose and our definition for truth and beauty and goodness apart from God. And that leaves us searching for it in these things that will ultimately leave us empty. So the question that we want to be asking in what does it mean to be human is, what does God have to say about us? What does God have to say about what it means to be human? And we go no farther than the first book of the Bible. So if you have your Bibles, turn to Genesis. And we're going to be in Genesis chapter 1 to start. And for a lot of us, this is going to be review. But I really want, I'm going to try to keep it as simple as possible. But it's going to be a little bit of review. Now, Genesis, first book of the Bible, which the Bible as a whole, just as a reminder, is a collection of writings. A collection of writings that make up one big story from the beginning of time until the end of time. And Genesis is a story about the beginning. Now, Genesis can be tricky to read because there's a lot of symbolic language and it's hard to discern what is what and was the talking snake actually there or what is Adam and Eve and this and that. And regardless of where you stand in that whole conversation, it is true. What is communicated in Genesis is true about reality, whether it's more symbolic or like literal, exactly what happened. It is true about who we are, true about reality. So as we read Genesis, it's important that we keep that in mind, that Genesis was not meant to give a scientific detail of creation, but rather just a story of the way things happened, about that there is a God who created the universe in an ordered and intentional way, and that plays out. Does that make sense? Okay. So we're going to be in Genesis 1, and Genesis 1, excuse me, kicks off where God creates the universe in an ordered way. Creates the universe and everything in it. And imagine that for a moment. It's easy to read Genesis 1 and God created, in the beginning, God created, blah, 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 go down the line. But I want us to just think about the universe that we live in. And we know more about it now in today's world than ever before because of science and stuff. And think about the stars and the galaxies and the universe and the systems that are in place in the universe so that we could live here on this earth, like gravity. If gravity was off by like that much, by a millimeter of whatever it is, of the measurement of it, we would all be dead, right? If there's so many different things that if it's set up for us to live and flourish the way that God intended us to live, it's amazing. Think about your favorite things in the world, right? But at the pinnacle of God's creation, before he paused in his creative work, he created his most special creation. Look to verse 26. It says this, "Then God said, 'Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground.'" So God created mankind in his image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the seas and the birds in the sky and every living creature that moves along the ground." So a couple things happen here. First, God says, "Let us make mankind, male and female, in our image." And we'll get to that in a second. "In our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky." That word "rule" in our language sounds like kind of like a tyrant king ruling over the earth. But in the original Hebrew language, it's less of like ruling over with like an iron fist and more of keeping watch or taking care of. So they have a responsibility there. Goes down, says it again, and at the end he says, "God blessed them and said to them, 'Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it.'" We'll get to that in week 3, but he's talking about sex there. Be fruitful and multiply. Make babies. and fill the earth and take care of it. So what I want to focus on this morning is simple. I want to focus on what it means that mankind is made in God's image and likeness. So there's a ton of implications to this, and we could spend 4 weeks just diving into this alone. But I want to keep it simple and just talk about what it means to be made in the image of God as it relates to the three questions that we asked. Who am I as a human? What is my purpose? Do I have a purpose? Do I have meaning? What am I here for? And do I matter? Am I valuable? Do I have worth? So those are the three questions that we're going to look at. Now, little lesson on Hebrew that I learned this week. In the original Hebrew, when it says God made mankind in his image, the word is Selem Elohim. Elohim means God or spiritual being. And Selem means in the image. And it's this idea, the Hebrew language has a lot more descriptive words than, like, they don't use adjectives as much. It has a lot more descriptive words than the words itself. So when you hear this word Selem, you would think of a statue or a picture or something that represents another thing. Later translated in Latin and then in Greek is the word imago Dei. Everyone say imago Dei. It's really fun to say. But when you hear imago Dei, it's this idea of it is the image of God. It is a representation of God. So just using that language alone, think about it for a second. So a picture is an image, right? So if I were to take a picture of this room and then show you guys, I would have an image that represents all of you in this room. In a sense, I could look at that picture and see who is actually here, right? Or in more like practical terms of what does it mean for someone to be an image? Do you guys know what an ambassador is? So most countries have ambassadors that go to other countries and they represent that country. So if you kill an ambassador of another country, it's considered war on that country. It's crazy, right? So they represent that country. The president of the United States is our chief ambassador, meaning that whatever he tweets, whatever he does, it represents our country in a sense, which is why whoever the president is, there's people who are either really excited or really scared and sad about what's going on because that person is an image of our country, okay? In the same way, we are made in the image of God. We are made to be a representative of God. So let's get into that as far as it pertains to our questions. You guys are doing great. All right. So first thing is, who am I? Who am I? So as we ask this question, who am I as a human? And we use this framework of being made in the image of God, two really important truths come of that. The first one is that we are God's unique creation. We heard those messages from those two ladies about who we are as humans, right? Would they agree with this statement? They would not say that we are unique creations. We're just like anything else, but we're just the most powerful and we're different. But no, being made in nothing else in God's creation was made in the image of God. God set apart an entire day in this narrative to create humanity. And he had an intentional purpose for them to be made in his image and in his likeness. We are unique creations. Unlike other animals, we are rational, meaning that we can take thought, right? You can have a thought, and then you can think about that thought. That's what basically, in the simplest terms, being rational is. An animal, like your dog, is probably awesome, but your dog doesn't have a thought about being hungry and then think, I wonder if I should eat or if I should eat later. No, they think and then they move off instinct. Humans are the only animals that think and then they think about the thought, okay? So we're rational, and that goes beyond even what that little definition. We're unique in that we are moral, meaning that we're the only creatures on this earth that make moral decisions, that we make a decision based on if it's right or wrong, okay? No other creatures in the universe make those kinds of decisions, make moral decisions. And then last but not least, we are spiritual, meaning that we have a soul. There is something beyond the bodies that we live in. We are more than just a body, more than just a physical body moving and eating and pooping and sleeping. There is a deep part of us that is a soul that goes, that transcends all of that. And that is unique to who we are. So we are God's unique creation, made in his image, made like him. The second thing is that we are God's representatives. I've already kind of said that, but I want you just to think about what that might mean for a second. God created humanity to represent him in the world that he created for them. So God created humanity and he said, I give you, basically, I give you the reins to take care of this earth. This is for your enjoyment, but it's also your responsibility. You are to represent me, to represent my goodness and my love and my joy and my freedom and my truth and my beauty and all of that. You're to represent that and to go out and to create and to experience the world that I have for you. That is who we are. You are God's unique creation. And you are God's representative. That is true for you now, and that is true for every single human being that has ever been born and that will ever be born. We are made in God's image. Which goes to our next question. That's who we are, but why am I here? What is my purpose? Looking just at being made in the image of God as our reference in Genesis 1, there's a few insights. The first one is that we were made, we were intended, we were purposed to trust, treasure, and honor God. Again, if you were on Winter Retreat, we talked at length about what this means. But essentially, God created us and said, here's the world, go take care of it and enjoy it. But trust me. Trust me to tell you and to show you what is good. What are the right things to do in my world? Trust me to tell you what is true, what's real about the world that you live in. Trust me to tell you what is beautiful. I've created this amazing universe, this world that is beautiful. Enjoy it. Trust that what I've made is beautiful. Treasure, not just to enjoy. God didn't create us just to enjoy like an amusement park, the world that he lives in. But he made us to actually trust and treasure him, to delight in God himself, that God is the best thing in the universe, better than anything that he's created. And he says, treasure me. And the last thing is to honor him. As a representative, being made in the image of God, think about the image, right, of the picture or the president, right? We were made to reflect to present God's greatness and his glory by the way that we live our lives. So if you imagine this picture, right? This picture, in a sense, if you guys are all awesome. So that picture represents how awesome all of you guys are. If someone were to see this picture, if I went to my family and was like, hey, look at the picture of how awesome everyone is, I'm magnifying that greatness, right? So as we go out into the world and we live our lives and we represent God by how we live, that actually brings God honor. And that is our purpose. That's why we're here. That's what we're here to do. On top of that, we are God's steward of the earth. Like I mentioned before, he gave them responsibility to take care of the earth, or the word rule over it. I think a better way to see it is that we were given stewardship of the earth. When your parents give you an iPhone, they're giving you stewardship over that phone to use it for the purpose that they've given you to use it, right? So you have a responsibility to take care of that phone, to charge it when it needs to be charged, to make sure you don't drop it and crack it. And if it does, to bring it to them so that they can fix it. You have stewardship over that phone. God gave us stewardship over this earth to take care of creation, the environment, one another, all of those things. And we see that with Adam and Eve in that they named the animals, they were taking care of the garden, all of that kind of stuff. Does that make sense? The last thing is we are here to be in a relationship with God and other people. Right after this, in chapter 2 of Genesis, God says that it's not good for man to be alone. And he provides a partner, Eve, So in that context, he provides a wife. But there's a sense that it's like, it's not good for man to just be alone. We were made for relationships with one another. But more importantly, in this story, we have a picture that man was made to be in a relationship with God. God is with them in the garden. His presence is there. He's interacting with them. He is there with them. And they're made to be in this trusting and treasuring and honoring relationship where God blesses them and they trust him. So at the baseline, if you ask the question, why am I here? This is why you are here. You are here to trust and treasure and honor God. You are here to take care of his world as if it were your own. And you are here to be in a relationship with him and others. This is true for you now. This is true for every human that has ever lived and every human that will ever live. To our last question, do I matter? This may be the most important question, but you have to answer those first two questions first. This question by far has the most implications of how you live your life. If you understand why you matter, that has a ton of ramifications of how you live. And to be human means that we are more valuable than anything else in all of creation. There is nothing that God has created that is more valuable to him than you. Not the Grand Canyon, not the ocean, not Harambe, not anything in all of creation, not other galaxies, not the moon, not the sun. You are the most valuable thing to him. You are made in the image of God. And not just that, but you, humans, every human that's ever lived and every human that will live, and you right now, are intrinsically valuable. Does anyone know what intrinsically means? It's a big word that I love a lot right now. Intrinsically is it means to be built in naturally. Meaning that there's nothing that can change the value. It's just built into what it is. It's intrinsically whatever. We as humans are intrinsically valuable. We are made in the image of God. And because we are made in the image of God, we have value that cannot be taken away from our achievements or how we look or any of those things. Because God has made us and says, you are valuable. I have made you valuable. Nothing else can tell you whether or not you're valuable or not. At the core of who you are my valuable creation, the most valuable creation, and you're intrinsically valuable. It's built into who you are. It's built into your humanity. You are valuable. You matter more than anything else in all of creation. So all of these things, like I've said, are true of who you are, and it's true for every human, no matter the age or class or gender or disabilities or whatever that may be. Every human is valuable to God in this way. But there's something else that is true of us that is not so good. True of every human, past, present, future, right now. True of us. And that is that we are sinful. We are broken. I'm not going to go there, but Genesis 3, you can write it down to visit it later. We see God give Adam and Eve a choice. Then he says, hey, trust me, treasure me, honor me. I give you good things. That is who I am. I'm a good father. I will take care of you. I will show you what is good, right, true, beautiful, all that kind of stuff. I'll give you your value. I'll give you your purpose. Remain in me. Hang with me. Like, let's do this together. That was how it was set up to be. But he gave them a choice. He said, hey, you're not robots. I'm not making you to be that. I want to give you a choice. That's what's important about being human. You have the moral choice to choose that from me or to go your own way. And the way he did that choice was by providing a tree that represented the knowledge of good and evil. And he said, if you eat of that tree, you will surely die, okay? You'll be cut off from the life source. A serpent comes along, a representation of evil in the world, and lies to Adam and Eve. It says, you won't surely die if you eat from that tree. Actually, you'll be enlightened. You'll know what is good and what is right and what is true and what is beautiful. And in that moment, Adam and Eve believed the lie. They believed the lie and they took from the tree and they ate of it, which represented that they wanted to define for themselves what was good, what was true, what was beautiful, what makes me valuable, what gives me purpose, all of those things. And in that moment, the consequences of sin entered the world. The first being death, both physical death and spiritual death, meaning that there was maybe an intention for God that humans would not die the way that we do. We wouldn't age the way we do. Who knows what it was actually set up to be. But death entered the world, and there was a moment in human history where humans didn't live the way that God intended them to live, physically in our bodies. Disease, sickness, disabilities, all of these things entered the world because of sin. The other thing, and the more important thing, is spiritual death. In that moment, there was a separation from God. Holy, perfect, awesome God can't be connected to imperfect, unholy people. So in that moment, God sent Adam away from the garden, separated, put a barrier between him and them. There was a separation in that relationship, a broken relationship between them and God. And rather than spending eternity with God the way we were made to do, we were now deserving of separation from God now and forever. Another consequence of sin is all things evil, hurtful, bad in the world. Right? Sin has natural consequences. Sin is bad in and of itself, right? But it also has natural consequences. When you lie, there's a natural consequence to that when someone finds out that you were lying to them, right? Distrust, and or maybe even a desire for revenge. You can see how these things can build up over time. All things evil, hurtful, bad in the world are because of sin, because of this natural human posture to say, I'm going my own way. I don't want to live your way, God. Which goes to the last point, is that we are all guilty of this. All have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, as it says in Romans 3. The consequence of sin is that when we're born, from the moment that we're born, this is true of who we are. That we don't look to say, God, what do you want from me? We say, how do I get mine? How do I become more valuable than the person next to me? How do I achieve more? How do I do all of these things? I want to define for myself what is right and what is true and what is beautiful, and nobody can tell me that I can't. And whether you like feel that actually or not, that's how you live. That's how I live. It's a natural part of who we are as humans. Every human is made in the image of God, therefore valuable, important, purposeful, but also broken, not the way God intended us to be, that we naturally choose our own way. And it's important for us to understand that we are both imago Dei, made in the image of God, but sinful, which is a bummer. But, and this is like the heart of the next 4 weeks, there is good news. There is good news. For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God, and all are justified freely by his grace, by his undeserved, unearned love for us through the redemption that came by Christ Jesus. God presented Christ as a sacrifice of atonement to take our place through the shedding of his blood to be received by faith, our trust in him. And because of that, if we trust in Jesus, we're not only saved from the penalty of sin, which is death and separation from God, we're not only saved and brought into a forever awesome relationship with him when we die, but we're invited by Jesus to live the life that we are intended to live into our image, to live into the fact that in Jesus we are able to trust, treasure, and honor him, that in Jesus we are able to represent him and to be unique and different in the world that we live. And we are able to remember our value that we have, that we matter so much to God that he did everything that needed to be done to restore our relationship with him. That is how valuable you are to God, that he didn't consider equality with God something to be grasped, but he became human, as it says in Philippians 2. He became one of us and he took on all the spiritual consequences, the physical consequences that we deserve so that we could be in a relationship with him and live the way that he intends us to live. Amen? Amen. So with that said, you may be asking, what does this have to do with sex? And the answer is plain. We have to understand who we are as humans, what we were made to be, before we can live the way that God intended for us. In today's culture, sex and sexuality defines who people are. But we are not defined by our sexuality or by the act of sex. We are defined by God and who he has made us to be. Sex is something that we do, and if we do it in the right context, is a really good, awesome, beautiful thing, but it is not who you are. You are more than just a body. You are a soul. You are a beautiful daughter, son of the creator of the universe. And if you don't know that, then you have no business doing anything in this world. Let's pray. God, thank you for this morning and the opportunity that we have to be